This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Quentin Kidd is professor of political science and government at Christopher Newport University and chair of the department there. He joins me on the program. Quentin, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Coy. How are you doing?
Very good. Where should we start? How about we start with the national health insurance reform debate? Your perspective on the latest?
Well, it looks to me like the Senate. It looks to me like reconciliation. The parliamentary procedure that everybody has begun to talk a lot about is going to be used to reconcile a budget bill with a House bill. It looks like Democrats have decided that's the only way they're going to get anything through. And they're going to go for it. It's a risky move. It's going to create a lot of bad blood, going to create a lot of tension in the Senate. But I think Democrats have decided that that's better for them in the long run than to let something not pass and take a hit for not getting anything done.
How do you think it's going to, and we'll get back to that in a minute, but politically, how do you think doing so would affect them in November? Because the Republicans have said if you pass any of this, and the president signs it, that's what we're gonna use that to run against you.
Well, yeah. See, I think it depends on how aggressive Democrats and the president argues about and talks about what they're doing and what they've done. And I think spin matters a lot. If Republicans can suggest, which they've been doing, that the Democrats are ramming something down the throat of Americans that they don't want. And if Democrats don't respond effectively to that argument, then Republicans win on the message war, and it's going to hurt Democrats in the fall, come election time. But if Democrats can get this off their plate, respond to Republican complaints by saying, "No, here's what we've done that's going to be good for the public, and this is what people say they want," and then move on to something else, then Democrats, I think, can mute some of that criticism. And by the time fall comes around, maybe we're talking about something else like immigration reform or something like that.
Yeah. And so reconciliation, explain this to us, because I was reading an article recently by E.J. Dionne who said, the Senate has already passed this bill. What would
right.
go through in reconciliation is just some amendments to the bill they've already passed.
Right, right. Yeah, what happens is reconciliation is a parliamentary procedure that essentially says the Senate has passed a bill, the House has passed a bill. Effectively, they're the same, but there's some budget differences, language differences when it comes to budget and how money is spent and how money is raised. And in order to make effective the law, the Senate has to essentially amend some of their language to reflect the House's budget language. So it's not meant to be a legislative tool. It's meant to be a budget tool to make budgets adjust between the two houses. And so the Democrats in the Senate say, look, what we're going to do is we're going to use reconciliation to adjust the two budgets when it comes to the revenue and spending side. And Republicans naturally say, well, no, look, you're changing legislation that way. You shouldn't go through reconciliation. You should go through the normal process, which would mean a filibuster-proof margin. The difference between reconciliation and the normal process is reconciliation requires a majority vote. Rather than a filibuster-proof vote.
So it's 50 votes instead of 60 votes.
51 votes or a majority, depending on who's there, how many people are in the Senate at the time, yeah.
Yeah. It was also interesting in the E.J. Dionne article, he points out, and I did not know this, but the 2001 and 2003 Bush tax cuts were pushed through the Senate on reconciliation, and
that's
it
right.
Increased the deficit by almost $2 trillion.
That's right, yeah. Republicans really... Don't have any moral high ground to stand on complaining about the use of reconciliation because they've used it most recently, as you noted, to pass tax cuts that weren't paid for that drove the deficit up by a couple of trillion dollars. Nobody's hands are clean here. Republicans have some moral baggage when it comes to the use of reconciliation. Democrats have used reconciliation in the past. But as the Senate, as a chamber, becomes more partisan and as it becomes harder to break a filibuster, reconciliation becomes an easier-to-use tool to sort of win a political fight. And I think that's what people really worry about, because if Democrats use reconciliation in this process, a lot of people say that the collegiality, what little collegiality is left in the Senate, might just disappear because of that.
We're talking with Quentin Kidd of Christopher Newport University, chair of the Department of Government there. Quentin, if I'm not mistaken, don't a lot of the really well-respected polls show that the vast majority of Americans want this reform?
Well, they show. Here's what they show. If you ask people broad, if you give people a broad description of the healthcare package, you get less support. If you ask people about particular elements of the package, and in particular a national healthcare program, you get large majorities of support, 60s, and some polls even show in the low 70%. So people like the individual elements of the package, but when you describe it in its totality, and when you add a few things on it, like, you know, the costs and all that sort of stuff, then people hesitate. And that's why I say the real winner is going to be the side that wins the PR war, the spin after the votes have been cast. And the president, I think, in order to make this work for Democrats, the president has to really step up and explain what the package is, explain the elements of it, and talk about why it's going to be good. And he'll probably be doing that more and more, I think, as we go along. He'll certainly do it at a signing ceremony if it were to pass. But so like a lot of things, if you tell people the details, you get some support. But if you describe it in a real general way, then you get hesitation. And the hesitation is because when you describe something in a general way, people don't really know what it is all about.
Yeah, that's a good point. But that said, the funding issue is huge, because we're talking about something that's going to really hit an already damaged economy.
Yeah, well, we're talking about 1/7 of our economy when it comes to healthcare and health industries in general. However, I think it's a fallacious argument to say, you know, that we can't do anything because our economy is really fragile right now. The vast majority of the elements of this healthcare program don't take effect for 3 or 4 or 5 years. And so we're not going to see an immediate sort of hit on our economy. We're going to see a gradual readjustment of the healthcare economy. And so it'll gradually then impact the national economy. But it'll hurt as much as it helps in areas, and it'll help as much as it hurts in areas. And so in the end, 10 years out, the healthcare economy as a part of the national economy will look different, probably look like a little smaller portion of our national economy. But it's not going to be the world. The sky's not going to fall tomorrow if this thing passes.
Yeah. Did you see it somewhere in the news? Obama was telling the health insurance companies that they needed to provide more information about their salaries and how much they pay lobbyists and bonuses, and to give people, he wanted all that stuff on their websites to give people an idea of where a lot of the money in the health insurance business, where that money is really going.
Right. Yeah, I mean, in politics, the definition of politics is who gets what, where, when, and how. And this is about a readjustment of who's getting a lot of what in healthcare. And the insurance industry has benefited tremendously from the healthcare system that we have right now. And the reason they're so opposed to this reform is it's going to cut into their profit margins. It's going to make them make less money. And so, you know, the president, I think the Democrats took the approach of they weren't going to really go hard on the healthcare industry if the healthcare industry didn't go hard in opposition. Well, they did go hard in opposition, and so now you see Democrats hitting back. And the healthcare industry's had some bad luck. You know, Blue Cross Blue Shield of California announced as much as a 49% rate increase for some of its policyholders, effective in 60 days, and that didn't look good, and I think the president has taken advantage of that. And healthcare rates are going up generally across the board, across the country, and I think the healthcare industry has had a hard time saying, well, we can't reform the system, but at the same time, we're going to raise rates by 20, 30, 40% this year.
We're talking with Quentin Kidd of Christopher Newport University. Let's turn our attention, if we can, now to Virginia politics and this issue of the new Attorney General, Ken Cuccinelli. The Washington Post has reported some interesting actions he's taken behind the scenes that have something ultimately to do with Northrop Grumman and gays. What in the world's going on?
It could have something to do with Northrop Grumman. Both the governor and the attorney general feel strongly that Virginia law does not protect gay and lesbians from discrimination, that the General Assembly is the only body that can make laws that protect gays and lesbians, like gender is protected, like race or ethnicity is protected. In the past, several Governor Kane and Governor Warner signed executive orders essentially saying, whether it's law or not, Virginia's executive branch and all of Virginia's government agencies are not going to discriminate based upon sexual orientation. Well, the Attorney General, when he was the Attorney General, Bob McDonnell advised Governor Kane that he didn't think that was legal. Ken Cuccinelli has continued that argument, saying it isn't legal, and Governor McDonnell took sexual orientation out of his executive order. Now, the Attorney General apparently has gone a step further.
Quentin, wait a minute. What exactly does that mean, though, when the governor takes it out of his executive order? Does it then allow government agencies can now discriminate? You can fire somebody because they're gay? I mean, is that...
Legally in Virginia, you could fire somebody because they were gay or lesbian, right?
That could be That could be your reason.
That could be your reason.
I don't want to work with a gay person.
The law does not protect you from discrimination based upon sexual orientation, like it protects you from discrimination based upon race. So you can't fire somebody because they're African American or because they're Asian, but you could fire somebody because they were a gay or lesbian.
That would be the only reason you need.
We're a work state, so you really don't have to give cause at all. But if somebody says, "Well, you fired me because I'm gay," the law wouldn't protect you.
Right, and under Warner and Kane, we had an executive order saying, "Well, at least as far as government jobs are concerned, category is protected."
That's right. That's right. Governor Warner, Governor Kane said, "Look, we're going to make a statement that we're not going to do that. We're not going to allow that kind of discrimination in Virginia, even if it isn't quote unquote the law of the land."
And Governor McDonnell lifted that and said, "I am going to allow that kind of discrimination."
He lifted it, and his argument was, the General Assembly hasn't made it law, so we are not going to enforce it as if it were law. The Attorney General appears to have gone a step further than that and has apparently gone to some colleges and universities around the state. In particular, we've heard a lot about William and Mary, and said, I think you should take protection based upon sexual orientation out of your affirmative action policies, out of your EEOC policies. So a lot of colleges and universities around the state, in fact, I think most of them, include sexual orientation in their protected policies that reflect areas they won't discriminate against people. The Attorney General says he thinks that's inappropriate, it's not legal, and he's advising them quietly, apparently, to take it out. And it's becoming quite a controversy, because what also is happening right now is the governor is trying to encourage Northrop Grumman Corporation to move its corporate headquarters to Virginia. It's trying to decide whether to go to Virginia, Maryland, or Washington, D.C., right? Now, Northrop Grumman is a massive corporation that has a corporate policy that's very friendly to gay and lesbian employees. They provide same-sex benefits, and they have a very progressive corporate attitude. So,
which is very common in corporate America, right?
It's very common in corporate America. So what's happened is Washington, D.C. just recognized gay marriage. Maryland has protect sexual orientation in its law. And so Maryland and Washington, D.C. are going to Northrop Grumman and saying, why, at a time when Virginia appears to be going in the other direction, would you put your corporate headquarters there, given your corporate culture and given your corporate approach to same-sex couples and gay and lesbian employees? And so the governor's in a bind here. He claimed to be a jobs governor. It would be a real feather in his cap to get a corporate headquarters here like Northrop Grumman.
It'd be huge, yeah.
It would be huge, but at the same time, he's being pressured by his social conservative base not to back off his effort to remove sexual orientation in any way from state government.
Wow. This is really fascinating. Quentin Kidd is the chair of the Department of Government at Christopher Newport University. So how is this going to play out? I mean, who makes the next move? What happens?
Well, it's going to play out behind closed doors. And, in the end, it may be that Northrop Grumman makes a decision based upon pure economics.
Because they don't have to change their rules just because they come to Virginia.
They don't have to change their rules just because they come to Virginia. And it may be that locating in Virginia simply makes more economic sense. The taxes are lower in Virginia. It might be easier to locate in Virginia. But if they do, they're going to have a PR mess in their hands that they're going to have to deal with. And so I think what's happening is they're doing their economic analysis, trying to decide where it would be best to locate. The governor's office is probably incentivizing that pot as much as possible, promising them tax breaks and that sort of stuff. Maryland and Washington, D.C. are pounding them on the public relations side, saying, how could you do this? It would send a horrible corporate message to people. And so there's a lot of behind-the-scenes activity going on. But in the end, it's probably going to be dollars and cents that makes the decision.
Yeah. And those behind-the-scenes going on as well would include, we believe, if you believe some reporters who are writing about this, Ken Cuccinelli continuing to have a conversation with public colleges in Virginia to change the protected status and remove gays and lesbians from that list.
That's right. I imagine that if I were working for Governor Bob McDonald, I would really wish that the Attorney General would just shut up right now. But obviously the governor doesn't control the Attorney General, and the Attorney General is making the governor's job more difficult when it comes to wooing corporate America to Virginia right now.
It's very interesting, isn't it? I mean, I'm not shocked, but I am surprised, because Ken Cuccinelli, he's one of the leading social conservatives in Virginia, but he's also a very smart guy, very politically savvy. And I was surprised that this would be one of the first things he would do in office.
Everybody knew that he's really interested, and he always has been, about social issues. He's really socially conservative, and he's always been that way, and this is the way he sees the world. I think what caught people by surprise, both at the Attorney General's office and the governor's office, is the idea that this corporate move would get linked to the effort to sort of clean sexual orientation from our protected classes language. Because initially the two weren't linked. They were separate discussions. Could we get Northrop Grumman here? That was a purely economic question. And then off here on the side, we had this discussion about what do we do with sexual orientation. And then the two got linked by some gay rights advocates in Washington. And so now they can't be delinked, and I think the governor would love for them to be delinked. The Attorney General's office has gone down this path, and he can't back off of it. And so everyone's sort of stuck in their positions strategically right now, and they can't move out of them. And in the end, Northrop Grumman has to make the decision about where it's going to go. And because it's a corporation, it probably is going to make its decision based upon the bottom line, profits versus losses, and where they can locate more cheaply.
And they can have whatever rules they want when it comes to gays at work for them.
And they can, because they have a corporate culture.
Right.
However, part of their bottom line argument might be, if we locate in Virginia, the taxes might be better, but we might not be able to attract the high quality employees that we need because they don't want to move to Virginia, a state that seems to be going backwards on protection of gay and lesbians.
Yeah, I find it very fascinating. We're talking with Quentin Kidd of CRISPR Newport University. I find it really fascinating that corporate America is much more progressive on this particular topic than most state governments are, and certainly Virginia's.
They have to be. They're competing with each other for the most talented people, and in order to be attractive to the most talented people, and they need those most talented people to make the profits that they need to make, to do the jobs they need to do. In order to be competitive, to attract the most talented people, they have to be on the cutting edge of these sorts of issues. State government doesn't. States don't. State cultures dominate states. And so there's a wide gap between the real competitive environment that a corporation lives in and the less competitive environment that a state lives in.
Quentin Kidd, he is chair of the Department of Government at Christopher Newport University. Quentin, thank you so much. I always enjoy talking to you.
Take care, Coy.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.